What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. It is myself and Brett Usher. We are going to get into some fun topics today. We're going to start off, though, with breaking news that just happened today. Obviously, as you guys are listening, you probably know that the NFL trade deadline was today. It was crazy. 10 trades, most trades in NFL history at the deadline. However, I think one thing took precedent over everything today. The NBA came up on top. The Brooklyn Nets, who have won two games all season. Yeah, I'm doing air quotes right now. Maybe a mutual parting of ways with Steve Nash. Maybe he got fired. Steve Nash said that the players weren't listening to him anymore. So he's gone. And then tonight, they are playing the Chicago Bulls. Jacque Vaughn is coaching the team. Shout out to him. Deserves a shot. But then about 30 minutes after the Steve Nash news breaks, Woj and Shams both are reporting that Ime Udoka is in line to be the next head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets would have to give the Boston Celtics zero compensation for that. This is all just very weird. There's a lot that is happening. Inject it all into my brains. But before we get into it, I got to bring in my guy straight off the island of Hawaii in Honolulu, Brett Usher. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing very well, man. Yeah, great to be talking to you as always. A wild morning in the NBA news world. Obviously, maybe it was an afternoon for you. I'm not sure. I still don't have that down. But again, as usual, I woke up to it like, oh, shit, Nash gone. So, yeah, it's not surprising that they're parting ways. But I think for it to happen this early in the season is what I find a bit surprising. What are they, seven games in heading into tonight's game against the Bulls? I mean, that doesn't happen very often. You know, usually it's closer to like the middle of the season, if you're even going to fire them during the season. So obviously they've been pretty dreadful overall on both ends. And yeah, that blame's always going to hit the coach first. That's just how it goes. So I don't know how much of that is justified in terms of, you know, the blame that Nash is getting. You know, how much is him, how much of it is the roster, whatever. But you know, this is just usually the way it goes. The coach is going to get canned first and then see what happens with the new coach, whether that's Jacque Vaughn or Ime Udoka. So yeah, this is a wild story. The Ime thing just like takes it to another level.
It does, man. But let's stay on Nash for a second, because First of all, I think that you're spot on. No matter what happens, you know, he's going to get, the head coach is always going to get the blame. What I find very weird about this is, I'm with you. We were actually talking about it in the Overstated NBA group. You know, who was going to be the first coach that was going to be fired? Was it going to be Steve Nash, Doc Rivers, or I even suggested, you know, Dwayne Casey, just because Detroit kind of got off to an odd start there. But yeah, man, I just don't know why, if you are the owner, you're Joe Tsai, if you are Sean Marks, the GM, you know, when Kevin Durant said this summer, I don't know why you just didn't fire Steve Nash then. I have no idea why you would wait seven games. I'm with you, Brett. Like, it's not surprising to me that Steve Nash got fired, but the timing of it is very surprising, especially when, and you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to get into it. You had Kyrie Irving with his anti-Semitism tweet that was still up, and him going back and forth with Nick Friedel. Just a bad look all the way around. Joe Tsai comes out, the Nets owner, and kind of condemns Kyrie. And then they go out and they, you know, they lost that game. It's just very weird, man. It's just a very weird situation. I have no idea still what to make of Steve Nash as a head coach. I think all of us can say, you know, I've been pretty steadfast with this. So everybody that listens to this regularly knows that I've been the same. I'm not just a homer, but like, it's crazy to me that if James Harden doesn't get hurt, or Kyrie doesn't get hurt, or Kevin Durant just wears a smaller size shoe, you know, the Brooklyn Nets probably win a title in Steve Nash's first season, but instead they don't, and it just goes haywire. I think he kind of got dealt a shitty hand. I don't know many coaches that would have kind of succeeded in that environment, you know, Brett, with like COVID and Kyrie not getting, you know, the whole vaccination thing, him being in and out of the lineup, then James Harden demanding a trade, then Ben Simmons. It's a circus, man. Like, it is just a three-ring circus. I think no matter what, I think everybody can agree on after today that the Nets are just, I mean, dude, it's the biggest circus in the NBA, and you can't take your eyes off it. It's wild to me. What are your thoughts, though? You know, you're the basketball savant, so to speak, on Steve Nash. Do you think he was a good coach? Do you think he was a bad coach? Do you think he deserves another shot? Like, give me your Steve Nash takes. I think you and I would both agree. I think Ime definitely outcoached him in the playoffs. I mean, that was just a wild series that the Nets just got swept. I don't know if I can fully blame everything on Steve Nash, but I mean, he's got two ISO players. I don't know, Brett, what do you see when you watch the Brooklyn Nets in the Steve Nash era?
It's just so hard to evaluate him in that context. I mean, I always think it's pretty hard to evaluate coaches just when you consider all the variables at play with regard to a team's success, but especially in this situation with everything that you mentioned. And especially last season, like, yeah, we could definitely talk about the 2021 playoffs. And if, you know, Durant, if that had been a 3-pointer, and yeah, they might've won a title, but like even beyond that, if we think about last season, just with the vaccine mandate and Kyrie not being able to play and that probably triggering Harden wanting out and then them trading Harden and not getting anything back in the sense of a player that really could. Well, they got Seth Curry, I should say, and Drummond, but, you know, they didn't get Simmons wasn't available last season. So, like, I just think, man, if it wasn't for that vaccine mandate, I know it sounds crazy to say, but, like, if Kyrie had just been able to play all season, I think there's a good chance Harden never wants out, and those three could have been really, really special. But it went the way it went, and – So, man, it's just hard to evaluate Nash. Like, because they're like when they were all together, even when Kyrie and Durant were together up until this season, at least, they were pretty fucking good. I mean, historically great offense at times. But again, like so much of that is just these guys being some of the greatest offensive players that the game has known. So it's like, how much credit do you really give Nash there? I think it's clear he's not like a generationally great, elite, unbelievable coach, probably. But I also don't think we can just say he's not meant to be a coach or he's a bad coach based on this. Because again, there's just been so many things between the injuries and the Kyrie stuff and the Harden trade that like they were just never at full strength, really.
Speaking of that, just real quick, under Steve Nash, just to your point here, let me just interrupt for a second. They were 94-67. They won one playoff series. KD and Kyrie played only 64 games together, and KD, Kyrie, and Harden played only 16 games together. Like that,
there you
go. To your point about it being so tough to evaluate him as a head coach, man, I think that's the issue that anybody has that watched the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, I don't know how you can 100% say Steve Nash is a good coach or a great coach. And I have no idea how you could 100% say Steve Nash is a bad coach. He's a terrible coach. Like, I don't know. I have no idea.
No, I'm with you on that, man. I don't know either. You know, I don't think anybody really knows. I mean, if I think my thing with Nash is like, was his heart really in it? Because if you go back to when he was hired,
it's wild, man. Wild.
It had been reported, that there was some reluctance on his part, that he almost had to be like coaxed into this or like talked into this. Like he was a little hesitant to jump into head coaching, if I'm remembering correctly. And then, you know, with the way that it was reported today that they mutually agreed to part ways, like he might be okay with this. I don't know if this is like a big bummer to Steve Nash, but if he wants to coach, if this is something he wants to do long-term, I absolutely think he deserves another shot because he is Steve Nash. He is a brilliant basketball mind that cannot be debated. Now, whether he's the type of guy that can get through to players effectively and bring players together and get the best out of players and motivate players, that remains to be seen.
Yep.
But just on the strength of his basketball IQ that he showed as a player, and I think in moments as a coach, I think he deserves another shot. Now, he may need to be an assistant coach for a time, as this usually goes. Like when you get that head coaching job right out of the gate, you lose it, then you kind of got to do some time as an assistant. And I think that would benefit him a lot. You know, he could use the experience. He had zero experience when he came in. So you take Steve Nash with a few more years of experience as an assistant and give him another go. Like if I'm a team, I would strongly consider bringing him in. I still think he has like upside as a coach, but this obviously wasn't working out. And again, we talked about it, I think on the last episode, it's just the roster just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like it's hard to have a subpar offense with Kyrie and Kevin Durant in the lineup, and yet that is exactly what they've been so far this season. I think heading into tonight's game against Chicago, they're like 16th in offensive rating. And when you have KD and Kyrie, like, that's absolutely insane. You'd think those guys could play 2-on-5 and have a better offensive rating than that. So the Ben Simmons fit is bad. I don't want to put it all on him either, but
I think you hit the nail on the head, man. And again, man, I don't want to sound like kind of a broken record, but to me, the Nets' entire issue is Ben Simmons. You know, you can't you said something, and I know I said this on the last pod. You said something on Twitter the other day that I thought was very, very accurate. You know, like, Kyrie is having a really good season. You know, you have Kevin Durant, who's offensively, I should say, having a really good offensive season. And let's be honest here, man. Like, Steve Nash as a player wasn't known, his teams weren't really known for being a defensive force, so to speak. But like, when they got Harden, the Brooklyn Nets were going to beat you because they were going to outscore you, and they were probably the greatest offensive team that we have ever seen, right? Like, they were that good. They weren't going to beat you with their defense. And this season, man, it's just like, I mean, I'll admit it. I think that I'm surprised. I think you're a little surprised. I don't know if it's rust with Ben Simmons. I don't know if it's mentally. I don't know if he's battling an injury, but I can only judge what I see on the court. You know, he's a professional athlete, man, and that's what we have to judge him by. And he's been awful, man. He's been one of the, I would say, you know, Brett, based on his contract, he might be one of the worst players in the NBA. Like, I don't even think he's a replacement level player right now. Just in, obviously, Brooklyn's on a lot of national television games. They played the Bucks, but man, he is just not good. It's not working. The defense isn't working. You know, and I want this to lead us to kind of, you know, our next, you know, thing. You know, Jacque Vaughn is obviously the interim coach tonight against Chicago, but then it's reported that Ime's going to be the head coach. Like, I have no idea if Ben Simmons, you know, had issues with Mr. Positive Doc Rivers, how is he going to mess with Ime? You know, because all last season, all we heard about how Ime was, you know, he's an old school Greg Popovich type of coach, and he was very, very hard on Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown. And it worked because they went to the NBA Finals, and in the second half of the season, they were the best team in the NBA. How is that going to work, you know, the first time Ben Simmons misses an assignment or he doesn't shoot and Ime is just in his face? Like, I have no – if Ime is the coach, I should say allegedly if he's the coach. Like, I have no idea where the Brooklyn Nets go from here. You know, they're playing Chicago tonight. Kyrie Irving, you know, we mentioned kind of the tweet and all this drama that's going around with him. Kyrie Irving wasn't even – I think they won last night. Was it last night or the night before? Kyrie Irving, they didn't even make him available to the media because they just didn't want to deal with it. Sean Marks said today that they wanted stuff to die down. Like, where does this team go, Brett? Like, because I honestly have no idea. Like, there's a part of me that thinks if you're going to hire Ime or even Jacque Vaughn for that matter, you might as well trade Kevin Durant. You might as well trade Kyrie to the Lakers. Like, I don't know why you would keep this group together, because it just – the pieces don't fit, and they're not going to be able to play defense. You know, I know everyone's excited about Joe Harris coming back and Seth Curry coming back. I think he came back Saturday. He was 0-for-5. But, like, those guys don't play defense, and that's their 30th in defensive rating. Where does this team go, Brett? Like, all right, Steve Nash is gone. Maybe it's going to be Ime. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's going to be Jacque Vaughn for the rest of the season. Maybe he gets the job. Maybe – I have no idea, man. Where do you think in your mind the Brooklyn Nets go from here?
Well, you got to see what it looks like with a new coach, first of all. And that's just a quick tie back into Nash. Like, I think that's really how we'll better be able to evaluate Nash, is like, if with Jacque Vaughn they run off 16 of their next 20 or something like that, or, you know, step up their level of play significantly and undeniably, then maybe we say, okay, you know, maybe it was Nash to a degree, to a large degree even, or Ime. If they hire Ime and this team just takes off, then, you know, it would be hard not to look back and say, okay, Nash was just the wrong guy for this team. Maybe he wasn't a good coach. Maybe he was in over his head, whatever. So that'll give us a better idea of that. But look, I'd like to see Jacque Vaughn get a real shot at the job.
You like him?
Yeah,
you
man.
Like him. Tell me why.
I do.
Tell me why.
I do. I mean, first of all, I think he's got a little bit of a bad reputation because people could probably just look at his record as a head coach. But you have to consider the teams he was coaching for the vast majority of that time. That was the Orlando Magic post Dwight Howard. some really bad teams, like 20, low 20s, I think, in wins pretty much every season. He was there for 3 years. And I mean, you can't say he did a great job with that team or anything, or like they overachieved. Like they were kind of as bad as you'd expect them to be. But again, I don't think that's a fair situation to evaluate him in. And then the thing I like to look at is the 2019-20 season, the COVID season, the bubble season, when he took over for Kenny Atkinson, they went 7-3. It was a pretty small sample, obviously. But if you remember that team in the bubble, it was like, I think Chris Chioza was starting for them. It was a lot of random guys, a real like hodgepodge roster. They didn't have KD. They didn't have Kyrie. They didn't have like, forget who their role players were. DeAndre Jordan, I think Wilson Chandler, Torian Prince, like a lot of guys didn't even go to the bubble. And so they weren't expected to do anything. And they ended up making the playoffs. And Jacques Vaughn was coaching that team. And I thought that alone warranted him the full-time head coaching job with that team. I thought he earned it. It was kind of strange when he didn't get it. But yeah. I think we all kind of got caught up in the Steve Nash name recognition and just the hype and the possibilities. Too. Of course, Kate, I mean, that's why they hired him probably above all else. And like, but you know, I remember at the time being like, okay, I'm excited. This could really be special. This is Steve Nash. Yeah, he's never coached, but it's Steve Nash. Like, but looking back now, I think Jacques Vaughn should have gotten the job. And yeah, he's coaching them tonight. And I'm looking at the score right now. They're up 67-56 on the Bulls. So, you know, it looks like they're in a pretty good position to get a win here and maybe go from there. But I would like to see him at least finish out the year, you know, and go from there. Look, Ime, like we know he's a very good coach. And we know his personality, his temperament, his disposition. He's probably the kind of guy that you want coaching these stars, coaching KD and Kyrie and Ben Simmons. These sort of diva guys that, like, you know, they're not going to step all over him the way they might another coach. You just know anything about his personality. Like, he's a no-nonsense, no-bullshit kind of guy. So, like, I get the appeal there in terms of his personality as a coach and how that would maybe fit with this team and get them to play up to their ability. But at the same time, like, you know, do you trust him? Are you just okay with the way he conducted himself in Boston? Are you okay with the message that it sends if you hire him? There's a lot to consider. And again, I just think I'd like to see Jacques Vaughn get it. Now, if they are just as bad as they were with Nash under Vaughn, then maybe you look to bring in somebody else. But like, give Jacques Vaughn a crack at it and see what happens, because I think he's a pretty good coach. But again, man, it's like, I don't really know. I'm just going off reputation and what he looked like, you know, with a different Nets team, but the Nets after he took over in 2019-20. I think that earned him a shot.
I think he deserves to get another shot. But going back to, I got some stuff for you here, you know, in kind of preparation for this. I think no matter who gets that job, man, again, they have a Ben Simmons problem. They just absolutely do. I got some numbers for you, Brett, that I wanted to – I think it's going to kind of blow your mind a little bit.
So, all right.
When – obviously Durant is on the floor and Kyrie's on the floor doing this, but when Claxton and Ben Simmons play together, their offensive rating is 107.6. Mm. When it's just Simmons and not Claxton, their offensive rating is 107.7. When Ben Simmons is on the bench – and it's Claxton with Durant and Kyrie, their offensive, they're scoring 124.1 points per 100 possession.
Wow. Yeah, that's elite.
Yeah. Like I'm just sorry for everyone that is, you know, they have a Ben Simmons problem, man. And until they figure it out again, like, I'm not jumping to any conclusions. Maybe it is just rust, man. Maybe he just kind of needs to get his bearings straight. But I mean, dude, he looks very, very tentative. We had the Kyrie telling him to shoot it the other day. He doesn't look like himself offensively and defensively. I was watching, I don't know if you watched that Dallas game, but Luka was hunting him.
Oh yeah.
Wanting Ben Simmons to be on him. And I know Ben Simmons got the he got the steal at the end of the game, which was good, dude. I mean, you want players.
Yeah, but that wasn't like, going to say it was like, it was a good defensive play, but it was like, it was kind of like right place, right time. Like, it wasn't super Luka impressive. Yeah, exactly. It was more Luka fucking up for sure. I mean, credit to Ben Simmons. That was a big play.
But Brett, he didn't even want to go in and dunk it when he was on the fast break. He stopped his dribble and gave it to Kevin Durant.
I know. For a split second, I was like, no, like he's going to. Okay. All right. Like, because he did. He like turned backwards. Like, okay, I guess he knew KD was there. But yeah, for a split second there, it looked like another Ben Simmons moment. And God, if he had fucked that up somehow by just like not going, because he could have probably just gone in and dunked it himself, if I remember correctly. But there's been quite a few moments like that, man. He had the airballed layup. I think that was that game. But the game I watched recently was the one where the Pacers beat them. And he was so bad defensively. Like I
watched that game.
He was in all season, dude. We talked about this in the last pod too, but like he's been as bad defensively as he's been offensively. And to go back to what you said about the offensive rating when he's not on the court and when he's on, it's like if you're going to take that hit in terms of offense when he's on the court, he needs to be making up for it defensively. And again, I think that was the theory coming in, but that has not played out. I don't think they're much better defensively when he's on the court either. And yeah, the offense is just not functional with two non-shooters.
Like you said, Brett, shockingly, Ben Simmons didn't play last night. The Brooklyn Nets won. Shockingly, Ben Simmons isn't playing tonight. The Brooklyn Nets are up by 9. Halfway through the third goal. Like, I'm not surprised that their offense is taking off the way that it is when he's not on the floor. When you read those numbers.
He's been that bad. And like, and it's plain to see when you watch them. Like, they want to get him involved. They're trying to make this work with him. And he's just a non-shooter. He's timid. And it's hard. Like you said, man, it's hard to say like what it is because there's just so many confounding variables with him. Because when you watch this tentativeness that he's playing with, it's like that could be a little bit of an injury. That could be a little bit of rust. That could be he's just fucked up mentally, you know, from everything. Like that thing against Atlanta might have really fucked him up. Maybe that's what we're seeing. Just like when he's on the court, he might not be the same player mentally he was even as recently as just before that dunk he passed up against the Hawks.
Yeah, I can't argue
so,
with
but
that.
So it's hard to know what it is, man. Like, is it injury? Is it mental? Is it rust? Is it that he's just not that good at basketball? And like, maybe this is something I was thinking about because I was thinking about who does he fit well next to? And I was pretty much coming back to those Sixers rosters that he was on. Like, maybe he was actually in the optimal situation because you had a big that could shoot. You had an elite rim protector, Embiid being both of those things, right? They had a fair amount of shooting around him. Like, maybe he was actually in a perfect basketball situation for him in Philly, and in just about any other construction, he doesn't make sense and he's really hard to fit pieces around. Like, we're seeing that with the Nets. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't, man. And dude, I don't know how they fix it, dude. I really, 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 really don't. And we'll kind of have to see what happens and monitor it. I don't know who the head coach is going to be. I'm with you, man. I hope Jacque Vaughn gets another shot. I almost am a little bit selfish, though. I want him to get a spot in like a place that's functional where it's not kind of the three-ring circus. Same with Nash, man. I think Steve Nash would be a great head coach for like an up-and-coming team that, you know, there's no real high expectations for. He can go in there. He can develop some guys and we can kind of really see how he works with that. You know, Jason Kidd was like that, right? He left, coincidentally, Brooklyn. Came to a Milwaukee team that desperately needed an identity, and he came in there with defense and all that. And really, I mean, he changed their culture. And I would like to see him get that opportunity. Same with Jacque Vaughn. But I mean,
experience, man, experience.
It is, man. But can we talk about the best team in the league, man?
Let's go.
Can we talk about something positive, man?
Let's go. It's about time. Let's do it.
Yeah, man. And just for everybody listening, this was not my idea to talk about the Bucks. Brett hit me up and he was like, "Hey, man, we haven't talked about the Bucks in a while. Let's talk about them." So, I mean, yeah, dude, they are record-wise the best team in the NBA. They are a fucking juggernaut. I will say this. I'm sure this will be met with a little bit of pushback. I was at the game on Friday night for 90s night, and those purple uniforms just fucking slap, man. They are so fucking awesome. I'm just going to say it. If you haven't, go check it out. Go check that out. And it's the one that the Ray Allen, Big Dog, Sam Cassell era, and their black jerseys that they've been wearing the last couple nights are sick. Like, dude, I love this team, man. I really, really do. Right now, their defense, they're first in defensive rating. They're first in opponent field goal percentage. Brooke Lopez is leading the league in block shots. Giannis himself is holding opponents to 32% on field goal percentage. And Jrue Holiday is averaging a career high in steals, man. And this team is legit, dude. And I keep saying it. I know I saw you like my tweet the other day. To be doing this, they lost another wing yesterday, Grayson Allen. Pump knees, he should be all right. But, I mean, to be doing this without, you know, Middleton, Pat Connaughton, and Grayson Allen obviously left yesterday. They're down three wings or two wings for most of the season. I'm not even counting Joe Ingles yet, but, you know, he'll be back by the trade deadline. And they're just – they're rolling along, man. Like, they're really good. I love that shout out to my guy Derek Michael. Brooke Lopez is on that Al Horford plan, dude. Just sat out all last season. He comes in, dude. He literally looks like he's entering his prime. Man, they're good, dude. They're really good, Brett. I mean, tell me, give me your thoughts. You wanted to talk about them. Give me your thoughts.
I did, man. I mean, we don't talk about them enough. You know, like considering half of our podcast is a massive Bucks fan who's
I try to keep it real, man. I try to keep it real. Very much in touch with the
Bucks. Like, you know, we don't need to talk about them every episode, but I mean, I think we owe it to our listeners to do it every once in a while because you always have good insight when we do talk about them, and especially now, like you said, best team in the league record wise, only undefeated team left in the NBA as of what is it, Tuesday night. So yeah, man, it's the defense obviously that they're doing it with. Like their offense actually hasn't been great overall.
No, it hasn't, man. They are I had the number up because I knew we were going to talk about this. This does not include last night, so I apologize for that, people, but they're middle of the pack in offensive rating at 112.7, but they're number one in defense by a decent margin here.
Yeah, there's no question they're the best defense in the NBA, and you know, it's like almost like people forget that Brooke Lopez missed just about the entire last regular season. Like they had to really adjust the way they played defense without him. And now it feels like they're back to the way they want to play defense and they're actually doing it better than ever. And Brooke Lopez somehow looks better than ever.
He looks amazing, man. I mean, he legit looks like he's like, in his prime.
Like maybe defensive player of the year if we were to award it today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like with the block numbers and then just the eye test, like that guy has definitely been the best rim protector in the NBA so far, if not the best defender. And they're able to put him in a perfect role, a perfect spot for success defensively with the way that they're playing. And like, you know, a couple things that jump out to me is the three-pointers allowed. They're allowing fewer three-pointers than any other team in the league, except maybe San Antonio. But if they're either the first or second best in terms of three-pointers allowed. Like, I think it's like 30.3% of opponents' shots against them are three-pointers.
I have some insight on that for you.
Let me hear some insight on that, because that's something that jumps out to me right away when I'm looking at why they are so successful.
And I know that you and I kind of disagree a little bit on how Game 7 went against Boston. But, you know, it's tough for me. Like, first of all, I think Budenholzer gets a very bad rap. I think he's very, very underrated. I don't know if he's necessarily a top five coach in the NBA, but he's definitely a top 10 coach in the NBA. Everywhere that guy goes, he wins. I mean, I think people forget that. I know that they got swept by Cleveland that year with Atlanta when they won 60 games. But I mean, his best player was Al Horford, right? Like, I mean, that team was not very good. But you know, he likes his system, man, and his system is all the way back to Atlanta. I just heard Richard Jefferson on a podcast with Zach Lowe. I think that the Cleveland Cavaliers, I don't know if it's still a record or at that time at least. They made the most three-pointers ever in four games against those Bud teams. And Bud is going to – he's going to pack the paint. He's going to make your team shoot – make your bad shooters shoot three-point shots that are low percentage. And it worked for a really long time. And you can't knock his system, especially, you know, if we're looking at Milwaukee. Giannis is a two-time MVP, Defensive Player of the Year award. They won an NBA Finals, right? Like his system – was working. And I think whenever you're in it with somebody and your system works and you just bank on it, it's very tough for you to adjust. And I think after that season, you know, especially with maybe it was a blessing in disguise, man, that Middleton was out that series, because I understand their plan was, hey, we got nothing left. We don't want Tatum or Brown to beat us. Let's see if Grant Williams can have the game of his life. And shout out to Grant Williams. He had the game of his life. But like they came in this year, they drafted Marjan, who I think is going to, as the season goes along, have a role here. And they said, you know what? We got to adjust a little bit. We're going to try to limit as many threes as possible. And to your point, man, they did it all throughout training camp. Charles Lee kind of led the team in a lot of the preseason games with Bud out. I think he had some type of surgery on his ankle. And it's working, man. I think they are, like you just said, man, outside of San Antonio, maybe I'd have to look it up. They're giving up the fewest three-point attempts. And you would have been, I mean, you could have just told me this a year ago or before the season without even knowing what I just said. I would have said you're drunk. I wouldn't have believed it. But like, dude, he's adapting and it's fucking working. And it's working without two of their top six, seven guys. Like it's crazy. It's crazy. Yep. So, I mean, shout out to Coach Bud, man. I know he gets a bad rap, especially on Buck's Twitter, which can be just a brutal, brutal, sad place sometimes. But dude, he's adjusting and the team is thriving defensively. Like it's not a surprise that they have the best defensive team in the league.
Yeah. No, it's same with me, man. Like when I saw that stat, like I had to double check it. Like I was watching them and was like, oh, they're really running guys off the line. Like what's that look like? Cause I know they've kind of been known for giving up threes. And then it was like, all right, that's an adjustment. That's adaptability. And that's exactly what they're doing, man. They're running guys off the line. They're funneling them into Brooke, who's down there playing drop. Like it's been effective. Like they're staying home. Like they're not over helping.
Yeah. Yeah. True Holiday went, he said it after the game. Cade missed a wide open three and Milwaukee got, I think it would have been to tie the game with a couple seconds left.
Yes.
And True Holiday said post game, he said, I was just a dumbass, man. And I went to trap. I shouldn't have done that. Like, dude, that is what you want to hear, man. If you're a Bucks fan and, or even a fan that just wants them to limit how many three pointers they give up, like you want to hear that. That means that it's working.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, I think you've talked about that too, like in the past, just how they have this tendency to overhelp and them not doing that. Like everyone just kind of staying home and, fighting over screens or going under screens and just funneling guys into Brooke and Brooke staying in the drop, you know, and that's changed everything. And the one guy that really, you know, got the best of them on an individual basis, at least, was Trey. And Trey's got that nasty floater.
Yeah.
Trey's a tough guy to play drop against. So it kind of makes sense that he was the guy. I think he got 40 against him, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that hurt their defensive rating a little bit in terms of, you know, what the points that they give up in the paint. But like that's Trae Young, man. That is what Trae Young does. Like you're never going to be perfect in this league. Like the other team gets paid to play basketball too. And Trae Young is one of, what would you say, Brett? Top five best offensive players in the NBA, like top 10 for sure. He's a really, really elite offensive player.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an offense unto himself, man. but like, that's what you're kind of willing to give up. Like he, I think, you know, I didn't watch that game, but it sounded like it was a lot of floaters, a lot of kind of mid range stuff. You know, just looking for the weak point in their defense, but the Bucks still got the win. And not every team is built like the Hawks. You know, Not every team has those DeJounte and Trey. So, you know, Trey's one of one. But just overall, I think this is a really effective way to play defense. I think one guy that we should give a shout out to is Javon Carter.
Dude, that's my guy, man. He's starting too. And you can kind of see his limitations a little bit. I think it was really hard for him to play in that Brooklyn series just because of the height, man. But as long as he keeps playing defense the way he's playing defense, man, like I expect him. Again, this is a little bit further out. When Chris Middleton does eventually come back, I expect Javon Carter to stay in the starting lineup. Like I think they should move Grayson to the bench and keep him in there, man, because his defense is very, very good.
Oh, dude, he's a bulldog.
He is, man.
He's a scrappy little guy, man. And I mean, that's a big part of it. Like I was looking at they're tops in the league in defensive rating, no question. But if you look at their starting five, it gets even crazier.
Come on, baby. Hit me with it, Brett. Get me excited, 90, baby. Let's go.
Per cleaning the glass, which filters out garbage time, probably doesn't have a lot of bearing on this particular rating. 93.3 defensive rating. By far the best of any five-man lineup to qualify for cleaning the glass's leaderboard, which is, I think, is 100 possessions played. by far the best. So he had 93.3 defensive rating for their starting five. And it's like, yeah, you've got Drew Holiday, probably arguably the best guard defender in the NBA, Javon Carter, and then you've got Brook Lopez, maybe like the DPOY so far, best rim protector in the league, and then Giannis up front. And then whoever, it's, you know, I guess it's been Grayson Allen, but like you can put whoever you want at that small forward. When you've got those other four, like that, it's just a ridiculously suffocating defensive lineup. And Javon's been playing big minutes. He's been excellent. He's gotten at least one steal in every game, if not two, this season. He's a pesky dude, man. And bringing him back was really smart. And this was not the starting five I probably would have guessed to see, but it works, man. It works, obviously, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
And I'll be honest, as a optimist, especially an optimistic Bucks fan, I did not expect this team to start off 6-0. And no. It's a shout out to them, man. And you know what? I see on Twitter a lot, you know, that the Bucks, they kind of lack athleticism, or they need to get more athletic. And while I don't necessarily disagree with that, like I do want to see a little bit more of Marjan. I understand why he's not playing a lot. But like, one thing that I like about Milwaukee, man, is everybody on that team, because they've been together for a long time. And obviously I think that, you know, Giannis is just one of the best leaders in the NBA, not just probably the NBA, but probably all of sports. Like, this team definitely takes its cues from him. Everybody on their team, like if you watch them play, man, like they all know their role. Like, imagine, I was thinking about it today on my ride home, because I knew we were going to talk about this on my ride home from work. Imagine, like, you know how everybody loved like the grit and grind Memphis Grizzlies, like kind of like, I'm not necessarily comparing, their styles are a lot different, but like imagine that team with the best player in the world on it. Like, that's kind of what Milwaukee is. Every single person from Giannis all the way down knows what their role is, and it just works. Like, it just fits together perfectly. They have the best chemistry. Like I said, it helps to have the best player in the world, who's averaging a career high in points per game at 33.8 right now, while shooting almost 65% from the field. Like, he's fucking ridiculous, man. Like, he's ridiculous. Bobby Portis is putting up, again, he knows his role, man. He's putting up, like, I know it's early, but dude, he's putting up like six man of the year type numbers. He's not going to win it, obviously, because it's the six man of the year seems to always be who scores the most points. But I mean, dude, he's been great and just hustling and getting timely baskets, timely rebounds. And Drew Holiday has been fantastic, man. I mean, granted, it's a six-game sample size, but he's averaging the second most amount of points in his career at 19.2 a game while playing first-team all-level defense. Like, this team just knows its role. And I know, Brett, you've seen me say it on Twitter, man. Like, it's going to happen in the next couple weeks to go 6-0 with the guys that they're missing. I mean, the reinforcements are coming, man. And then you throw in, you know, I've been kind of jokingly labeling him as kind of the backup point guard. You throw in Joe Ingles to this team, I think that there's a trade to be made at the trade deadline. I would be, frankly, I'll just say it now, I'll be surprised if Jordan Nwora, George Hill, or Grayson Allen are on the team come after the trade deadline. So I think there's an opportunity for them to get a little bit more athletic on the wing. But, I mean, I don't think necessarily, at least for this season, I don't think that that's necessary. Obviously, I would like it. But I mean, I just think for this season, man, everybody knows their role. Everybody's playing great. And I expect that, what did we say that offensive rating was at? I think it was at, it's 16, man. When Middleton comes back, when Connaughton comes back, and then they incorporate, I expect that at the end of the year, man, they'll be top 10 in offensive rating.
Yeah, man, if they could get to top 10 in offense and, you know, stay in the top three in defense, like they're right there, man. And, you know, just got to stay healthy, as far as like Brooke, especially, like he's just been so critical to everything they've done. But
who would have thought at the beginning of his career that this guy would have been like a defensive powerhouse the last 4 years?
He's really just evolved as a player. Just thinking back to like what my perception of him was early in his career, just like this kind of high scoring, like almost like high volume shooting big. Then he gets into the 3-point shooting, and then he becomes this like elite defender. And now, you know, he can give you a little bit of everything, man. Like they went to it in the playoffs last year, like when you need some easy buckets and you've got a size advantage, you can still dump it to him down low and he's going to give you that. He can still shoot the threes. He's an elite defender. So it's like all these different things that he's been at different times in his career, they're kind of all coming together right now. And he deserves all the credit in the world. He's had a very interesting career and a hell of a career. And he's vital to this team's success. They're not the same team without him. Like we saw last regular season, even like they're just, they adapted, they made it work. They're always going to be great with Giannis, but like he takes them to another level, man. And yeah, getting Middleton back. It's crazy to think about how good they are. And Middleton's not even there, like you said. So what's the timeline on him? What are we looking at with Middleton? Like next
couple weeks? I mean, I actually think he's might be further along than Pat Connaughton. Pat Connaughton's got that calf strain, but they just today, Chris Middleton's going up to Oshkosh, Wisconsin to practice with the herd, get a little reps in.
So he's close.
Yeah, I think he's very close, man. And the benefit that they have, man, they're going to be able to work him in. And just like as a long-term outlet too of this team, because I don't know where they're going to finish in the Eastern Conference hierarchy. They've been off to a great start, but it's a long NBA season. You know, it's definitely a marathon. But you know,
I think we probably both underestimated them. Just talking about the regular season standings, yeah, which obviously isn't everything, but like they might just, you know, if they finish first, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah,
maybe they'll take their foot off the gas at some point, but you know, right now they look like the clear cut best team in the East.
And you know, man, it's crazy because looking at the other teams, I think that, you know, you and I would both agree, man, like that Tatum and Brown are definitely the best wing tandem in the NBA. And I don't even think it's close, man. Like Tatum is,
yeah,
you know, we'll talk about him on another podcast, but that dude is also playing at MVP level basketball. He's phenomenal. Jaylen's phenomenal. Marcus is phenomenal. But you know, with this whole kind of reemergence of Lopez, and if he can even if he regresses, you know, to 90% of what he is right now, which I think is doable, like I don't see anybody in the East, not saying that they can't beat Milwaukee, but up front with that front line, especially with the unknown of Robert Williams, definitely not Brooklyn. I mean, maybe Embiid, but we all know about his conditioning issues. Like, there is nobody in the East that can match what Milwaukee can do on the front line. When you look at Giannis, Brooke Lopez together. Oh, and then we can throw in Bobby Portis. Like that is tough, man. Like that is the way that they're playing right now. Again, I'm not sure how sustainable this is from Brooke, but like I said, if he can just kind of keep this up a little bit, like there is nobody in the East that can match what Milwaukee can do on the front line. Nobody.
I think Cleveland might make the most sense.
I forgot about Cleveland. Maybe Cleveland. Yes, maybe Cleveland.
That would be the one where, like, if I'm a Bucks fan, like maybe I don't want to run into them. It's still early, but they look pretty damn good. And obviously they've got the 2 7-footers and maybe Dean Wade as their small forward. So they're really big in the front line. But yeah, I don't know. That would be, other than that, man, I don't know how you really deal with them. But like, would you say, all right, is this the best version of Giannis? Is this the best Giannis has ever been?
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. Did you have you seen some of the shots that he's taking, man? He's doing some shit.
The fadeaways.
Like, he had a fadeaway off the glass shot the other night that I was like, yeah, what the fuck? What in the hell is, like, that looked like Tim Duncan. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
It was crazy, dude. And he's doing some stuff, man, where he's getting the ball at, you know, kind of the free throw line. And he's doing some shit, man. Like, he's just not – it's not just – I mean, he's still doing, you know, kind of putting the head down and going right through people. But he's adding some stuff, man, that was not there the last couple years, dude. Like, he's figured some stuff out, man. Yeah, yes, to answer your question, yes, dude. I think this is the best version so far that we've seen, man. He's on another level, man. He really, really is. Like, it's – as a Bucks fan, my dad saw Kareem. I didn't get a chance to see Kareem, but like, this is like, I've never had a team, man, in the NBA where we had the best player in the world. And it's just like, we're spoiled, dude. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy. I agree. I think this is the best he's ever been. And it's just crazy, like, to have the success he's had already. Just like when you talk about the multiple MVPs and the defensive player of the year and the championship and the finals MVP. And like, he's still getting better. It's scary that, like, at this rate, you know, maybe he gets better next year too. It's like, then what are we talking about? you know, are we talking about a top five player of all time? Like, because I'm starting to think, like, I'm not going to name any names.
Excited, Brett. Don't get me excited.
I'm not going to name any names in, like, the consensus top 10, but there's a few of those guys where I'm like, I don't know that I would take them over Giannis. I think if we're just talking about how good they are at basketball at their peak, I don't know, man. And Giannis is like, he's already had a long prime, you know, like he's been in a serious prime for the last, 6 years anyway. And it's going to keep going. And the conversations are going to get fun with Giannis. Maybe we're not quite there yet, but like another MVP, another championship. And then it gets really interesting. He's in all those conversations. So, but I agree, man. And it's just amazing that he continues to get better. And it's because he wants it. He's not satisfied. Like he's a rare human being. There aren't a lot of people in professional sports or even just in humanity as a whole, like Giannis. He's a special dude. And when you take that kind of person and give him those physical gifts and that basketball IQ, it's like, man, that's what, you know, all-time greats are made of. So it's really exciting stuff.
You know what he is, man, from a strictly mentality standpoint, man? He's the closest thing this league has seen since Kobe Bryant. Like, I'm talking strictly mental, man. Like, and he is – I would say, though, you know, and this is not a knock on Kobe. Kobe is obviously, you know, a top 10 player of all time, depending on where you have him. But, like, I think he's probably a better leader than Kobe. He's definitely not as hard on his teammates as Kobe was. But just from a strictly personal, mental, like, I am going to kick your ass. Like, did you see the Redeem Team documentary yet?
You know what, dude? I have not. And you know what's funny? Like, the day that it came out, I was all geared up to watch it. I was so pumped. And you know what happened? Draymond punched Jordan Poole.
No shit.
It was that day. Shit. And then so that just like consumed me. Like I was just like just devouring Twitter, looking for details. And then the video comes out and like, or that maybe that was the day the video came out. But either way, like that just like fucked me up. Like I haven't watched it. Like it just threw me off. And I haven't gotten around to watching it since. I totally intended to. But no, I will soon.
Well, there's a clip in it or a scene in it where like it's their first game and he's playing against Pau Gasol and he tells his teammates like, I'm going to run this motherfucker over. And he runs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw that clip. Like, that's fucking great. Yeah.
I saw that. First of all, that's badass. Like, that's awesome. Yeah. And like the second thing that came to my mind, dude, is like Giannis would do that. That's the only other player that I could think of that would do that. Like just I am going to do whatever it takes to win. And it doesn't matter if we're teammate, whatever. I will do whatever it takes to win, dude. And he's got that mentality, man. He's a dog, man. And just kind of to, man, I can't believe we're talking about the Bucks. I love this. Just to kind of
he had a great quote, man. Did you see I'm 99% sure it was him. I was reading something about them, but like when they were talking about the defense, he's like, this is something. Maybe it was Brooke, but somebody on the Bucks. I wish I could remember who. I should have looked this up beforehand. But it was like this is. As a simple thing, but like this is something we can do every night. Like we may be having an off shooting night, like our offense might suck, but this level of defense, this is based on effort and scheme. And this is something
that's all it is,
that,
man. It's all it is.
This is we can do this every night. And I think that may have been Brooke that said that, but then I think Giannis was like, I want this to be our identity. And like he means it. And honestly, man, not a lot of superstars would even say that, let alone truly believe it or truly.
Dude, this is a guy, Brett, that he said on the broadcast the other night, I think it was ESPN doing the game. I think they were playing Brooklyn. He said he was a role player. He said he's a role player doing his role on the team. Like this dude, he's insane.
He's rare, man. Again, and like it would be one thing if he was like, you know, a 6'4 shooting guard with like mediocre athleticism and a questionable basketball IQ, and he had this mentality, he'd still probably be a great player because of it. But when you put that in 6'11", 250, freak athlete, high basketball IQ, come on, man. Like, it's not fair. There's just nobody like him. I don't know that there's – I mean, I would say, like, MJ, you know, because MJ was a ridiculous athlete too. But when you talk about that combination of mentality – and just physical advantages, I mean, it's a very, very short list. It's like MJ, like Kobe wasn't even quite that level of like athlete, you know, like the, not what MJ and Giannis are. And MJ and Giannis are very different athletes. Like Giannis doesn't have a 50-inch vertical, but he's 6'11", 250, and he moves like a wing. There just haven't been many guys like that, man. There just haven't. There's been a lot of guys with the mentality that didn't have the physical tools. There's been a lot of guys with the physical tools that didn't have the mentality. He's the rare combination of both, man. And it is a lot of fun to behold.
It is, man. Like it's a, like I said, dude, it's a joy to watch every night. And this dude, he's on another level right now, man. He really is. It's insane, man. And I can't wait, dude. And to your point, you said it earlier, man. I think the Bucks play the Cavaliers in like 14 days. Yeah. November 16th, they play Cleveland. They play them twice this month, man. It's going to be fun, dude. I mean, looking at their schedule, especially in the East, there's no easy games, man. But yeah, man, we could be looking at maybe like a 18-2 start here, something like that, man. They can really crank it up, man. But
maybe that's what they want to do, you know, is get way out in front, and then they can afford to coast a little bit, you know, as it gets closer to the playoffs. Like if they,
I think, based on last year, man, I don't think we're gonna. I think this team, like again, this is just a 6-game sample size. I did not think this going into the season. I think they just might say, fuck it, dude. And they might go for 60 wins. I'm not saying that they will, but I think they have the mentality this season of they're pissed off at what happened last year. And they're just out to prove everybody wrong, man. And if this dude keeps playing like this, man, he's going to win the MVP. Like I have all due respect to Donovan Mitchell, who's playing, dude. Donovan Mitchell. Well, we'll save that for next podcast. He's on another level. He's playing great MVP level. We said that last podcast. Tatum's playing unbelievable. Dame's playing unbelievable. There's so much talent in the NBA, but dude, they keep playing like this, man. He might win it again unanimously. It might be like that.
Yeah, and man, again, if that does happen, if he does get another one, and if they do get another chip, like I don't know, like all bets are off on where the conversation might go in terms of the standings. Like it's gonna get crazy, like in terms of the all time rankings, and I'm here for all of it. Like I'm not too bothered about somebody saying Giannis is better than so and so or so and so. Like that shit at this point doesn't bother me. Like you could take him over just about anybody all time. And like I think if you had a good enough argument, I'd hear you out, man. Like because everybody's criteria is different. But it's gonna be some fun conversations, and that's what really makes this shit interesting, is seeing these kind of legacies develop. And Giannis has an all timer, man. There's no question already.
You ain't lying, man. You ain't lying. Hey, man, we're going to end this, dude, but I appreciate you talking about the Bucks, dude. I mean,
we should do it. Let's do it every month, man. You know, like, why not?
A little Bucks check-in, little State of the Union with the Bucks, dude?
Yes.
We can flip off. We can flip back and forth between Bucks and the Celtics and the Blazers a little bit, dude. I like it. But yeah, man. Yeah, dude, that's going to do it for us, man. Good podcast. Just to let everybody know, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Kind of sung how good Brooklyn was playing at the beginning. I want to go watch the end of this game. I know Brett does too, but they are down 99-90 with.
They're down now.
Kyrie Irving, man, shit's gonna get weird. Brett, it's gonna get a little weird, man. Kyrie Irving has 4 points.
He had zero in the third when I checked when we first started. I couldn't believe that.
That's crazy. And yeah, Zach LaVine's going off. DeMar DeRozan, let's go. Yeah. Let's go watch the end of this game, man. For myself and Brett, we will we'll talk to you guys soon. Appreciate it, man. Bye.